Uriah Tuck, Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Brian Kilmeade. Thanks so much for listening on this beautiful Thursday. Big hour coming your way. So much happening as we skid into a Memorial Day weekend. Many people looking forward to it. There's going to be air shows, I know, on Long Island in particular. You got the Blue Angels or Thunderbirds. They kind of rotate. Hopefully you'll get one in your area. Hopefully the weather will cooperate. Sometimes it gets rained out. But I just love the fact that the military is reinvigorated. I mean, I had a chance to talk to go on the USS New York and to talk to the admiral in charge. And he's telling me recruiting's through the roof. And I think people have a real appreciation for people serving again, want to get involved, and for the people who gave the ultimate sacrifice as we get closer and closer to Memorial Day. Meanwhile, the big story this week, and there's a lot of them, is the story and the revelations about Joe Biden's health and Joe Biden's mental health and what exactly he was doing as president of the United States and what he wasn't doing. And now everyone, Republicans and especially Democrats, are talking about how surprised they are to find out that Joe Biden wasn't fully engaged, that he wasn't really capable of running for re-election. And that why did he run to begin with? I think the bigger story is, why was he ever president? I mean, there are problems and revelations coming out in this new book written by Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson that just shows about a guy that couldn't even do a taped town hall for a promo shoot where he knows the answers and the questions because they said it was a total waste. He was unable to perform. The pandemic saved him, allowed him to become president. And when he became president, he doesn't seem like he was president. So Matthew Continenti, one of the finest columnists in the country, in my view, had a chance to take all this in and sees this developing story. He is the director of domestic policy and Neil Chair at AEI and columnist of commentary and founding editor of the Washington Free Beacon joins us now. Matt, there's so many things about this story I find disturbing. I don't even believe the story now that they said that he hasn't had a prostate test, a PSA test since 2014. I don't believe it. I don't believe they just found out he had cancer this week.
Well, Brian, thanks for having me. And there's no reason you should believe it, because the bottom line here is the Bidens have no credibility. When you consider how they covered up, deflected from his age-related conditions throughout his presidency, when you think about how they covered up, deflected from Hunter Biden's troubles and problems and relation to the Biden Inc. family trading off Biden's position for money and influence. You hear the news about this cancer diagnosis coming in between the release of the audio of Biden's interview with the special counsel Robert Hur and the publication of Original Sin, the Tapper Thompson book you mentioned, with all these anonymous sources talking about the cover-up. It really does beggar belief. And it's because of that lack of credibility that people are raising questions about Biden's cancer diagnosis.
How about the fact that essentially they conclude, and by the way, it just bothers me so much that Jake Tapper is part of this book because his sources are incredible. I know he's the ultimate insider in Washington. And you got to figure if he has 200 sources for a book he put together in a month, think about if he wanted to pursue the mental health of the sitting president. Let's say he got half those sources to speak out and say, wait a second, he doesn't have cabinet meetings. They have to hand out cards for him to, they have to ask the cabinet secretaries ahead of time what questions they have of the president so they can get his answers ready. The fact is he has people so alarmed with donors that he is so out of it that people, he has to bring a teleprompter to meet with them behind closed doors. When all this stuff, if he was running this in 2021 and 22, I'd buy this book in a second. But instead, right, he was the other way. This guy's fine. How dare you bring things up about his mental health? And he says he has since apologized to people like Lara Trump for jumping down her throat for making these accusations. That's my problem with the story. I feel like by talking about it, I'm helping him sell books. And I really think he should donate the money to, I don't know, cognitive health around the world, not to his own pocket.
Well, I think what your anger is shared by millions of Americans, Brian, because it's true. We can just go to the videotape and we can see Jake Tapper denying that there was a problem with Biden, playing down criticisms from Republicans throughout the Biden term. Now he's out with this big book generating all these headlines. And I think it's right to call him on it. And I think that he may have been surprised. He shouldn't have been, but he may have been surprised by the blowback and the public reaction, because you hear him singing a very different tune now in the more recent interviews, saying recently that the conservative media was right about Biden. Well, that's not what you said at the time. It's not even what you say in the book. It's what you say after you realize that if you want to have any audience here, you're going to have to admit that you did wrong.
A couple of things, I'm busy on the morning show, so I can't really watch and choose not to watch the other shows. But I find it very interesting that he is going on with like Megyn Kelly, and Megyn Kelly basically called him out multiple times to say they doubt the validity of his story. And now we're looking at the revelations that he's got such serious prostate cancer, and he hasn't gotten the test since 2014. And I thought it was earlier this week, Dr. Zeke Emanuel. He obviously worked on with the pandemic unit. He was an advisor to President Biden. He's a friend of the Biden family. He said this about what he thinks about Biden's cancer. Cut 9.
You can see the metastatic lesion on scans because that's how they know it's there. It's not tiny. And typically, prostate cancer is not a galloping disease. It's a slow-growing disease. So if you line all that up, he was last examined 15 months ago. It's hard to believe if he had the PSA test 15 months ago that it wasn't elevated.
How about he didn't get it? I mean, it was absent from the test. Now, either this Dr. Kevin Connors is the worst doctor in the history of medicine, or he was told to avoid these subjects because he said he was cognitively healthy and he didn't talk anything about cancer. And the guy had two aneurysms and his son died of cancer. Why wouldn't he take this test? It's a blood test.
Right. And most importantly, he was the president. And so a lot of his allies, Biden's allies, are circulating this medical guidance saying that men over 70 don't necessarily need to have the PSA test because it might generate a false positive. But not every man over 70 is president of the United States. And so especially given his medical history, as you lay out there, Brian, it would be a malpractice for him not to take this test while he was president. And that's why people are so angry and continue to ask questions about it, especially considering that other presidents, including President Trump, have the PSA test. And President Trump is over 70 as well. You know, I think here the reaction of the Biden team and the Democrats to people raising legitimate questions about this diagnosis is so revealing. What are they saying? Well, they're saying, oh, it's just a conspiracy theory about Biden, or they're saying this is just misinformation about Biden. Those are exactly the same terms they use when conservatives and Democrats in private were raising alarms about Biden's cognitive decline. Every time I hear the words misinformation or conspiracy theory nowadays, well, I begin to think I'm on to something.
This is the third major story, and people wonder why Fox has ratings. Number one, we have people of all different opinions come on. But, this is the third major story they told us was true and ridiculed people for bringing up the saying it's not true, the Russian hoax. I'll forget about the impeachment and the problems they had there. And then we'll just skip right to the laptop. They told us laptop wasn't real. Then they told us it's real. They told that Russia got Trump elected and we proved that it wasn't the story. There was a plot and plan. The Hillary Clinton hatch. She's never been accountable for. But the details have all been transcribed. And now you have this. We saw that he was a mess in 2020. We can't believe that they handed him the nomination. The pandemic led him to get elected. And now we find out mentally wasn't there. Nobody thought he was. Nobody picked the 25th Amendment. And then we find out physically he supposedly just got cancer and no one believes that. So I just love this. The last thing I'm going to leave you with, Matt, is you talk about the future. We have Villagrasso, the former mayor of Los Angeles, calling out maybe he wants to run for governor, calling out Kamala Harris and Becerra, who has other aspirations, wants to run for Senate, I think. And he's saying, how dare you not tell people and hide the president's mental condition? So Democrats going against Democrats, the subject, Joe Biden's mental health and the cover up. So even before it gets to the general election, they're going to have a primary on who knew. And you might be disqualified if you did. Final thought.
Well, I think that you have to have that primary, because if the 2028 nominee is Harris or Pete Buttigieg or someone who is part of the Biden team, and they're still saying that, well, everything was fine and this is a conspiracy theory, then the Democrats are going to start in a huge hole. In order for the Democrats to have any chance of success in the coming elections, they're going to have to run against the Biden legacy, not just the personal lies, Brian, but also the policy disasters.
And if you do like those policies, you have to also say they weren't Joe Biden's. It was whoever was running the White House,
right.
Whoever
right.
that was. Hunter, Jill, Ron Klain, not sure. Matthew Condeni, thanks so much. Pick up the free Beacon and read his columns on commentary. Appreciate it, Matt. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Back in a moment. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor, editor-at-large of The Spectator, and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. I'm inviting you to join in-depth conversations every week on the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. So Ray Dalio, maybe the world's most respected macro investor, has one thing in common with me. We both went to Long Island University, and that's where it ends. He's brilliant. He's had a remarkable career at the age of 75. He's all about giving back the knowledge that he has and also getting our country economically in good shape. He's not playing politics. He's just playing economics, sound economics. And he studied other economies, other dynasties, and see how they fell. And he wants to make sure it doesn't happen to us. He wrote this book called How Countries Go Broke, The Big Cycle. It was my opportunity to bring him in and speak to him for 30 minutes. He gave me 30 minutes just to talk about where this country is, his trip to Saudi Arabia with the president, and why he wanted to write this book. Here's my interview with Bridgewater founder Ray Dalio. You also noticed the president went overseas and reset relations, or maybe reinvigorated relations with the UAE, with Qatar, as in Saudi Arabia. Was that a wise move? And you, as an investor, have you also looked at investments with countries like that?
I was at the Saudi Arabian gathering, and I thought that that was terrific. Lots of deals.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you give us an idea what it was like in there? Was it it was beyond small talk? It was real talk?
It was a lot of deals, real talk, big wow. deals, okay? And also, there was an understanding. It was very business-like, but also a sense of relationships. So there was the gathering, and, you know, there was this friendliness, and then sitting down and doing deals. So we have a very business-like approach to what's happening in the Middle East. And, of course, the economic interdependencies together with the geopolitical military interdependencies is part of the changing world order. But it is now splitting into this, opposing sides in this tough game.
Ray, would you also say that for a national security perspective, beating China to the punch with these deals is necessary?
I think that
economically, I'm not talking about military.
I think 80% of this is about economics. Okay, it's about smart finance. That's why I'm concerned about the debt.
Yes.
So it's 80% of this is the well-being of the people of the countries, and that's about economics. So the ability to do these deals is very important in a world that is also very fragmented right. and people are seeking self-sufficiency. So the question is still, who are the allies economically? Who can you rely on? So it was good in a difficult world. But let's keep in mind, the monetary order is at risk. The domestic political order is at risk. Okay, there are two sides, and they're at war. And then internationally, there's this great conflict with it. So this is a very risky set of circumstances that everybody must, I think, calm down, be analytical, and do the smart, well thought out balance dealing with the budget, dealing right. with each of these.
Does the world need the U.S. and China to do a trade deal?
Some form of course, it needs
in
clarity.
In the 90 days, needs clarity. And you say we have to win the AI race.
Yes, that's existential.
Quick thing about you personally. So you start off, you weren't a scholar in high school. We went to the same.
I hated high school.
We went to the same college, Long Island University.
Yes.
I'm thrilled to be able to say that. And you went there, and you said you found yourself there. Did they see the potential in you there, or did you begin to find how much you love business?
Well, I loved markets when I was 12, so I played that. And in high school, that was much more my interest. I didn't like when they would tell you, remember this, remember this. When I got to college and I could pick the courses I liked and I had the freedom and all of that, I loved college. Right. And so the school was so great for me. It was a transformative experience. So I loved it.
Right. And now you get your first job, $25,000. You got paid salary in the 1970s, which shows. And you went to Harvard Business School.
Yeah. 1973, Harvard Business School. I graduate. And I think it was the highest salary, which was then $25,000.
Do you think back to everything, the success that you've had now? And do you remember the days clearly when it was you in a two-bedroom apartment in New York City where starting your company with just two employees?
Yeah, a guy.
Did you have this vision that Ray Dalio would be what Ray Dalio is?
No, of course not. And I played the game. I just liked the game. And it's still now. I just like the game. You know, I played
you didn't
with
the
guy
it to be
I
rich.
Played rugby with, and then we had some institutional clients. I got some institute, gave them advice, and then made them some money, and then got going. And Bridgewater will be 50 years this year. It'll be 50 years old. So it was great, you know, bring in people, build a company, 1,500 people, and succeed and make clients happy. So 50 years, yeah, what a dream.
I asked Phil Knight. I said, I read your book, saw the stressful days when it looked like it was all falling apart and you found a way to make the money. And I go, it must feel so good now. He says, I miss those days.
Yes.
What does he mean? What would bring? Do you understand
that? It's the nature of striving, you know, to get the setbacks. You know, markets are like that. You learn from the setbacks.
Failure.
Yeah, that's right. That's how you learn.
Right.
Right. If something goes well, you've got it down and then you don't learn. I have a principle, pain plus reflection equals progress. You know, I've come to actually value the setbacks because I reflect and I say, okay, what does that tell me about reality? And what does that also tell me about how I should deal with reality? And I think if you have that, life is a journey of these, you know, learning experiences and ups and downs. You get stronger and you feel better. Yeah.
And last question. That's why you said the last lap of your career, you want to give this all back. The knowledge that you had to build your company, you now want to spread it out.
I'm at that stage in my life that I have, you know, I want to give away whatever I've got, some of the principles that I've learned, but also philanthropically.
And now pick up his book to learn more and stay ahead of the curve and find out where this country's going, how countries go broke. Let's make sure we don't do that as a country. Ray, thanks so much for everything. Great to see you.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. And I hope this is the first of many interviews.
See you at LAU.
Absolutely.
Okay, at the reunion.
You got it. More coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We look forward to the Senate's timely consideration of this once-in-a-generation legislation. We stand ready to continue our work together to deliver on the one big, beautiful bill, as President Trump named it himself. We're going to send that to his desk. We're going to get it there by Independence Day on July 4th, and we are going to celebrate a new golden age in America.
So the big, beautiful bill passes the House before the Memorial Day deadline that many people thought was impossible. I'm going to get into details on it, but it came through, I think, 5:55 in the morning because we're about to go on Fox and Friends. I was on the USS New York this morning, and then realized between that and the assassination of two Israeli diplomats who just were walking in Washington, D.C. and were gunned down by some psycho yelling, Free Palestine. That's what we woke up to today, a good story legislatively for Republicans. And a horrific story, but far too familiar for Jews around the world. And the anti-Semitism shows its ugly head in terms of an assassination instead of just a protest. But believe me, they're chanting the same thing in the streets of Columbia. You arm those people, they probably do the same exact thing. While they burn, by the way, while they burn their diplomas. Think about this. You're a parent. You spend $77,000 a semester, unless you're on some visa where you probably have your government pay, and then you burn the diploma after 4 years. Absolutely insane. Quick note, Ray Dalio, so nice of him to come down. We wanted to play the whole interview unedited. On television, we only put on 6 minutes. It was 22. So we put it as a podcast. So go to wherever you get your podcast, O'BrienKillmeade.com. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Mike Cirelli is going to be with us, Navy SEAL officer, host of the brand new Fox Nation series, The Unsung of Arlington. So that's going to be exciting. Always great. He's one of the more interesting people you will talk to in and out of the military. So what can I tell you about the big, beautiful bill? First off, they're going to gradually fade away with IRA and, you know, the induction, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is really the new Green Deal, wind, solar, the whole, they're going to fade out with all this battery storage. What they're going to do is if they started building, it's nobody's fault. You take a government contract. You don't want politics to destroy your life. So they say if you're starting the project within 60 days, continue. A lot of them have merit. Just should government be subsidizing all this? Realize back in 2008 when the market collapsed and Barack Obama used that opportunity to put together Solyndra and all these other battery programs, the only thing that was subsidized and worked and got paid back was Elon Musk's SpaceX and his Solar City, all his program. He got saved. And he said, I'm paying back the government $500 million with interest while taking the penalty for paying back early because they pay. So those programs in some blue states where Republicans were, where they were saying, we kind of need the wind. We got the jobs here. Final vote was 216 to 215. So here is Steve Scalise, obviously happy. Cut three.
Democrats made it very clear. They didn't want to have any part in helping get America back on track again. But we were never deterred. When this bill could have failed 10 times over, we said we were going to get this done and failure is not an option, and we meant it. We knew we were fighting for the families who've been struggling for way too long under the failed policies of Joe Biden and all the Democrats who did have control of Washington for too long. We watched higher interest rates and higher inflation and lower wages and a demise of the American dream.
All right, we got the rhetoric, but here's the negative part. They say it will add, according to the CBO, which I highly doubt, but it's a ballpark. It'll add $3.3 trillion to the debt. It doesn't cut enough. For example, Ryan Zinke wins out because he removed the statute in there that said that they would have to sell 500,000 acres of land to the federal government. All right, they didn't want to do that. So they held on to that. What else? No trend. Medicaid stays in, but nobody gets to use money from Medicaid to pay for trans aid. Remember, Medicaid was supposed to be for the elderly in need and for those in need, not for able-bodied people. But there is now a work requirement in 2026 for anybody receiving this aid. The people that didn't vote for it was Congressman Davidson. Andy Harmon of the Freedom Caucus, Andy Harris for the Freedom Caucus. He did not vote for it, but he voted present. But 60% of the American people are going to get a tax cut. The one thing I will push back on all the time is when people say this is a tax cut for billionaires. It makes no sense. The facts don't line up. Also, Chuck Schumer's telling people the SALT caucus folded. Really? They got a 40,000 threshold. People get up to $40,000 to write off in taxes in blue states with high taxes, whatever your state taxes is, for those who make up to $500,000. Please tell me how that is a failure. So what is the bill? Here's a little bit more from Thomas Massie, one of the only Republican not to vote for it, and here's why. Cut five.
Well, I'd love to stand here and tell the American people, we can cut your taxes and we can increase spending and everything's going to be just fine. But I can't do that because I'm here to deliver a dose of reality. This bill dramatically increases deficits in the near term, but promises our government will be fiscally responsible 5 years from now. Where have we heard that before? How do you bind a future Congress to these promises? This bill is a debt bomb ticking.
So obviously not for it. Every Democrat will be against it because it doesn't spend enough and it cuts back on green programs. Hakeem Jeffries just gave up. He could have done and spoke on the floor for hours and just held up the inevitable, but I guess he's got plans over the weekend. I like it. I mean, he knows it's a waste of time, so he spoke for a half hour and then called it quits. So that's fine. The other big story, which is new to the rest of the world, but not to us and not to you, and that is Joe Biden was not able to ever be president. And it became more and more evident that Hunter and Jill were running the country. And now all of a sudden, Jake Tapper decides to become a journalist and decide, I'm going to find out how bad Joe Biden really was over the last 4 years. And it turns out, terrible, could not hold a thought, could not hold a town hall, could not have a work a full day, and everyone lied about it. And everyone made a ton of money, and they enjoyed their location to power. Here's Alex Thompson. He is co-author with Leland Vittert. Cut 10.
When you were reporting this, did people in his inner circle, did those that you talked to, acknowledge that the media, were they surprised by how complicit the media was?
It was interesting. I had one conversation with someone. This was after the election, while we were reporting this book. This person said, listen, yes, we deserve blame for X, Y, Z. We were hiding him. This person also sort of got in my face and they said, listen, the media deserves some blame too. Like, we were sort of amazed at some of the stuff we were able to spin. You guys should not have believed us so easily.
So do you believe, think about this. They lied to you, they threatened you, and now they're mocking you. They are mocking you, and I'm not talking to our audience. I'm talking about anybody listening right now that thought that Joe Biden was fine and that people are doing ageism or pretended Joe Biden was fine and if he was a high-functioning White House. And just because he didn't like the press doesn't mean he wasn't doing a lot of work. He wasn't doing a lot of work. He couldn't walk, couldn't talk. And he does not know. Don't expect him to ever admit to it because the guy's got dementia. The people who have dementia don't know they have dementia. They understand they might not be as sharp, but they don't understand how bad it is. And the family kept him in the dark. But I love that soundbite for this reason. What they're saying is, we are laughing in your face while threatening you. We can't believe the threats worked because we had nothing. We were bluffing the whole time. Now, remember, I could play a bunch of clips when, in fact, Eric, if you had it, do you remember when Joe Scarborough said, I'm going to tell you something and F you if you don't believe it? So he comes out and says that. And I'm thinking to myself, why would anyone go on the line and say something as severe as this?
Start your tape right now because I'm about to tell you the truth. And F you if you can't handle the truth. This version of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever.
So Jake Tapper, in a bailout to Joe Scarborough, and I don't know why he's bailing him out, says Joe Biden specifically targeted him to convince him that he was fine. Well, he's gullible enough to think that the guy with the whispering tones who can't hold a thought was fine. And he told his audience of all Democrats, he's fine. And how F you if you don't believe him. And now they're mocking him for buying it. They played them. And now they want to know where their credibility is. It is gone with the laptop and with the Russia hoax. When we come back, we talk about our military, our planning, the changeover with this administration, the threats, as well as a brand new series with Mike Cirilli on Fox Nation. You're going to love it. Here we are just days from Memorial Day. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hablas español?
Sprichst du Deutsch?
Komm du norsk?
If you've heard that sound from Babbel before, I bet you do. Babbel is the science-backed language learning app that actually works. With quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts, Babbel gets you on your way to speaking a new language in just a few weeks. With over 16 million subscriptions sold and a 20-day money-back guarantee, just start speaking another language with Babbel. Right now, up to 55% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/Spotify podcast. Spelled babbel.com/Spotify podcast. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. Mike Cirelli is here, Navy SEAL officer, hope now retired, host of the brand new Fox series called The Unsung of Arlington. Mike, great to see you.
Good to see you, too. And congratulations. Daughter graduated her master's yesterday.
Yeah, I got three graduating in 3 weeks. I got my son just graduated law school. He's going right for the bar. So he's still in New Orleans. Of course, it was great to see the prisoners get out and try to greet him. And then my other daughter graduated, got a graduate degree from an education. She got a teaching job, which is awesome. And then my other one graduates in 2 more weeks. And then we see what's next for her.
That's what we call an underperforming family. You should be well, ashamed.
Yeah, at least the education is there. So, Mike, before we do anything, this is what we woke up to today. I was going to be in the USS New York and have the pageantry with a band around. And the big, beautiful bill, okay, it passed. That's news. But the other thing we get up with is an assassination in Washington, D.C., of two diplomats. A couple who was going to be married in weeks, gunned down because they're Jewish, gunned down inside a Jewish center at an event, gunned down by a guy who chants Free Palestine. Oh, does that sound familiar? Exactly like we're hearing in these college campuses. So what do you say to that? How much time have you spent in Washington? You think those streets are relatively safe where they got shot?
Well, that's what we call a soft target. So the anti-Semitism, and we've talked about this before, is just it's shocking to me. But from what I've heard, and I know this happened this morning, the individual went to the University of Chicago. It's the radicalization going on within our universities. This has to stop. And I know Trump is making strides by cutting federal funding to these universities, but there's got to be accountability.
They're burning their diplomas. Do you believe this? Burning your diplomas. And the acting director saluted Mahmoud Khalil, who's leading the being financed by Hamas and Iran. I mean, everything's upside down.
You know, Trump said it in a press conference. He was talking about something else, but this nonsense has got to stop. It's almost like Reagan putting the foot down with the professors from Berkeley back in the day. Is that these professors, these leaders of university, they know better. They know better. And again, it comes back to accountability. And sometimes for these young individuals, you've got to tell them no.
Well, you know the mindset of killers. I want you to hear that what this eyewitness said. They came front to after the killer shoots two innocent people, unarmed, walking hand in hand. Katie Kalischer walks up and sees this guy, and he looks relatively rattled. Cut 23.
He wasn't calm. He looked very scared, but I thought it was because he had just witnessed a murder. I didn't think for a second he was actually the murderer. I feel very lucky to be alive. And I feel extremely sad for the victims, their families. It could have been me.
And then the cops come over and they arrest him, and he says, it was me. He goes, yeah, take me. Free Palestine. He's proud of it. Do you understand? Did you come up with that mindset in Afghanistan, Iraq, proud of killing people?
No. That is a byproduct of war. Never took pleasure in having to kill any human being.
But to people you came up with, came up on maybe.
Oh, deprived. The true definition of savagery. And to prey on the innocent, to target these two Israeli staffers is just a deprived mind. And this guy's going to get what he deserves. And in my heartfelt condolences to the family of those two.
So here we are, Memorial Day. Perfect time for your series, The Unsung of Arlington. First off, the concept. Give those people that gave so much for the country, that are buried in Arlington, their moment in the sun.
You know.
Or another moment.
Another moment. This day, Memorial Day, one, it's to me, it's not a celebration. It's a headstone.
Yeah.
It is a day of remembrance for those who gave their tomorrow for our today. And I think Memorial Day we've become disconnected with the meaning of it. For a lot of people, it's the beginning of summer. It's beach chairs and barbecues. And I understand that. And we want them to have fun. But we've got to take a moment to remember the long line of those that have given their lives for this nation. And these stories of these five individuals that we focus on in the Unsung of Arlington, one, this series impacted me. I didn't realize how much it was going to impact me. And to dive into their stories and to learn just the amazing principles by which they lived their lives and the impact they had, we as Americans need to dive into that history. We need to remember. And again, there are lessons to be learned from each of these individuals.
All right. So here's one. And by the way, a great thing to do if you do want to think about the holiday and not just think about barbecues, start it on Fox Nation by watching one of these stories. Here's one. This is John Glenn, Cut 39.
As one of the first seven Mercury astronauts, John Glenn was part of a cadre of Americans who became renowned heroes across the country.
John Glenn was the oldest of the seven astronauts selected for the Mercury program. At 40, he was the old man of the group.
In 1962, it was his time for his mission, and he became the first person from the United States to orbit the Earth.
So, and he had a military background too.
Right? And we know John Glenn as an astronaut. What we lose sight of is he was a combat warrior. 149 combat missions between World War II and Korea. Wow. And, you know, he was a Marine to the core. He went back into space at 77. The man, and he's, you know, I wouldn't say he's relatively unsung. He's well known, but his life was remarkable. And I think what we learned from that is service extends beyond the uniform. He continued to serve his country. He ran for Senate or office. Remarkable human being. And he basically showed us, he proved that, you know, the possible or the impossible is possible by orbiting the Earth.
Here's a little of a guy that's another side of Ronald Reagan, Cut 38.
The sight before us is that of a strong and good nation that stands in silence and remembers those who were loved and who in return loved their countrymen enough to die for them. Each died for a cause they considered more important than his own life. They volunteered to defend values for which men have always been willing to die if need be. As we honor their memory today, let us pledge that their lives, their sacrifices...
You realize, too, how great... He gets better when you listen to him, right?
So I am a big Reaganite. And you know what he's trying to say here is these people believed in something greater than themselves. And mm-hmm. what they believed is in us, the potential of what we can become. There is a quote that is well known from Reagan. And it goes like this: those who say we're in a time where there are no heroes, they simply don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to a fraction of the cost that's been paid for freedom.
Well said. The Unsung of Arlington, now on Fox Nation?
Now on Fox Nation.
Awesome. And Mike Cirelli brings it all to life. A natural on camera because he's got a great story to tell. Mike, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. Keep it here. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With a message for everyone paying big wireless way too much. Please, for the love of everything good in this world, stop. With Mint, you can get premium wireless for just $15 a month. Of course, if you enjoy overpaying, no judgments, but that's weird. Okay, one judgment. Anyway, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan, equivalent to $15 per month required. Intro rate first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See full terms at mintmobile.com.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan is where I am. Just at the USS New York over on the west side, New York City, Fleet Week. Great recruiting tool. Good to flow thousands of Marines and sailors into the city, and they get the chance to talk to people, wear their uniforms out. The days of getting in trouble are over, I hope. 37 years it's been going. It's really important, especially with Memorial Day looming just 3 days away. Daniel Bilak will be with us, member of the over in Ukraine, the Territorial Defense Forces of Ukraine, former chief investment advisor to the prime minister of Ukraine, Mark Thiessen, standing by. We have a lot of breaking news, some of it good, some of it not. So let's get to it.
Number three.
This fake town hall was in order to film it so they could make it into campaign commercials. They filmed it in Delaware with supporters. Joe Biden's town hall, which was closed to press, was so bad that campaign officials determined that it was not usable.
Accountability is coming. But the story we all knew, most of us knew, Joe Biden was not capable of running the country, even after he won the election. More disturbing revelations in how his inner circle is now mocking those in the press that bought their lie.
Number two. When the cops actually came in,
He said, I did this. He said, sir, I'm unarmed. He put his hands up. He grabbed a red kufi out of his pocket and started the Free Palestine chants. You know, there's only one solution, Intifada Revolution.
Right. Kill everybody. Assassination in D.C. Jews targeted again. And there are two diplomats from the Israeli embassy as protests continue to rage at the Ivies, chanting the same thing the assassin did. Detained activists, frozen funds, have this New York University in Columbia and many others scrambling to contain the damage.
Number one.
We look forward to the Senate's timely consideration of this once-in-a-generation legislation. We stand ready to continue our work together to deliver on the one big, beautiful bill. We're going to send that to his desk. We're going to get there by Independence Day on July 4th.
Let me just say this. Speaker Johnson has done a phenomenal job, and the guy never wanted to be Speaker. The big, beautiful bill has passed in the House. What does it look like? What are the compromises? Where they met? What would it mean for the economy? How's the market reacting? I'll bring you the latest. Mark Thiessen, there's so many moving parts in this. And, of course, we bring in one of our favorite guests, Washington Post columnist. Washington Post columnist as well as former speechwriter for George W. Bush and a fellow at AEI. Mark, from what we know of this bill, it's thousands of pages. I know the president considers a victory. Do you?
Absolutely. It's a huge victory. I mean, so think about this. Donald Trump brought millions of new voters into the Republican Party by promising to eliminate taxes on tips, by eliminating taxes on overtime, by eliminating taxes on Social Security.
All in.
And it's all in there. And it's and he delivered it in record time. I can't think of another example where people have received such an immediate return on their investment for voting for a candidate than they have with this bill. And it's not just that. He also campaigned on promising to secure the border and deport illegal migrants. There's money in there for the border wall. There's money in there for more ICE agents and more judges.
$175 billion.
Yeah. So he's delivering on that promise as well. And, you know, it's just a huge, huge achievement. It doesn't mean it was easy to do. You're right what you said about Speaker Johnson. I've never seen a more, you know, I've seen less effective speakers with bigger majorities than Mike Johnson has had. The way he managed the Republican caucus last year, getting things done, and now getting this bill through by one vote. With such an historically narrow majority is a huge, you know, people don't appreciate sometimes, you know, Congress is in low regard with the American people for good reason, but this is legislating at its best. This is herding the cats, making compromises, getting the votes, and not taking your eyes off the prize, which is the larger thing that Trump is getting in this bill.
Look, you know, they don't have massive, well, we know the fraud in Medicaid. We know the bomb that Obamacare put into Medicaid. It was supposed to be state run for those people, the elderly and the disabled. And now it's able-bodied people. There's going to be a work requirement. That's a compromise. But people are panicked. When you tell people, I got insurance, the next day you don't have insurance. Well, who's responsible? That party. It could be devastating politically, even though it might be justified rationally and fiscally. So the president just said, don't touch it. But the one thing that bothers me is if you explain the people that are abusing it, that able-bodied people refusing to work while collecting it, you could, I think most American people would say, that's not okay with me. And that's what Karl Rove said to do. So right now, the work requirements are coming in 2026, and then the push down to check the fraud and abuse twice a year is the compromise, it seems.
Yeah, and so keep also in mind that they have another reconciliation bill that they can pass this year, because they didn't pass a budget last year. So theoretically, he could do two reconciliation bills. So let's get this bill over the hump and then see if we can't return and address some of the things that were too difficult to get done. They could do another one, and then they get a third one next year, and they could use that to pass the DOGE recommendations, streamline government. I mean, imagine if they pass three reconciliation bills with major tax cuts, with Medicaid reform, with DOGE recommendations, and also Trump gets a bunch of trade deals. I mean, the economy is going to get supercharged. His poll numbers are going to get supercharged. He's on his way. He's on his way.
So let's talk about the assassination last night of two diplomats in Washington, D.C. We had an eyewitness. The guy gave himself up. He said, I did it. He was proud of it. And as I said on television, it reminds me of October 7th. These people were so proud of the massacre, the putting babies in ovens, the chopping off of heads, the torture of women, the assassination of dads in front of their families, the taking of hostages. Proud of it. Here's what Katie Kalischer, a Jewish woman who was at the event, said. Cut 23.
He wasn't calm. He looked very scared, but I thought it was because he had just witnessed a murder. I didn't think for a second he was actually the murderer. I feel very lucky to be alive. And I feel extremely sad for the victims, their families. It could have been me.
Could have been. And they were about to get married.
It's just horrible. But, you know, I would say to every college student who's been protesting and participating in these campus protests, this is what globalize the Intifada means. It means bring the Intifada here, right? That's what they're chanting on these idiots. Don't even know what the hell they're saying. They don't know what river, what sea. They don't know. They're just, you know, swept up in these protests. When they chant globalize the Intifada, that means kill Jews here in America, too. And that's exactly what's happening. And what's ironic is that this was a meeting of a group of sort of left-leaning Jews who want to help the Palestinian people. and this is how the pro-Hamas faction reacts to that. They go and massacre these people who were meeting to raise money to help Palestinians. This is Hamas is a terror network. It's got supporters here in the United States. And if you think that the Trump administration isn't going to double down now on deporting, pulling these student visas and deporting some of these people who've come into this country to stir up this kind of violence, there's a direct line that goes from Harvard to Columbia to Washington, D.C. and this murder yesterday. So the radicalization that's happening, that it started in those college campuses and has spread. And now we've got a beautiful young couple who was about to get engaged and get married and start their lives. And their lives have been ended. It's just absolutely horrific.
So Claire Shipman over the weekend had Columbia University had a graduation. She is the acting former anchor, the interim Columbia president. And we know Mahmoud Khalil, who's the same age of the assassin, 30 years old. Don't look at him as some student. He graduated living on campus. Figure that out. He's being detained now, and hopefully his visa revoked, but someone's paying his legal fees to keep him around. Here's what Claire Shipman said. She had him not apologize for anti-Semitism, but listen to her theme. Cut 30.
We firmly believe that our international students have the same rights to freedom of speech as everyone else, and they should not be targeted by the government for exercising that right. And let me also say that I know many in our community today are mourning the absence of our graduate, Mahmoud Khalil.
Do you want to throw up in your mouth?
Yeah. I mean, so now replace Jews with black people and say the same thing. I dare you. If there were people chanting for the death of black people on her campus, white supremacists marching to massacre black people in this country, saying that black people should be thrown out of this country from sea to shining sea, America will be free of Africans. You know, would she be standing there and saying that?
Of course not.
It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. These people their moral compass is so broken and so bankrupt. And I quite frankly, one of the things I'm hoping stayed in the bill, I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, is J.D. Vance had a bill to tax the endowments of these rich Ivy League universities. Right now they only pay like 3% tax on their endowments. He wanted to tax it at 34%. I think we should tax the hell out of their endowments and use that money to pay for those tax cuts for working class Americans, and let Harvard and Columbia and these morally bankrupt schools start funding tax cuts for working Americans.
So Mark, let's just change gears and talk about Ukraine. Last night they had a major drone attack at a missile facility in Russia. That's good news. But for the most part, Vladimir Putin is supposed to come back to Trump with his parameters for a peace deal. We already know it. He wants basically elections where his guy wins. They can't only have nothing but a police force, no military. They're going to take areas they haven't even won over yet that they haven't stolen. They're not even in areas. They want all the Donbass. So we're not going to agree to that. Ukraine is not going to agree to that. What do you think Putin comes back with?
You know, Putin is kind of in a corner right now because he knows that the second he says no and walks away, that Trump is going to impose massive sanctions on his energy industry. Because, you know, one of the things I love about Donald Trump is that this is a president who does what he says, right? Dozens of presidents said, I'm going to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. Only Trump did it. Barack Obama said he's going to draw a red line on the use of chemical weapons and bomb the Syrian regime if they use chemical weapons on his people. It took Donald Trump to deliver on that red line. Like, he has said that if Putin walks away and is the obstacle to peace, he's going to crush his economy with secondary tariffs on oil, which means you can trade with Russia or you can trade with America, but you can't trade with both. And he's also said that he's going to arm the Ukrainians and increase the military support for Ukraine. So, you know, what Putin is trying to do is tap him along, avoid saying yes, but also avoid saying no. And at some point he runs out of road. It's going to be one, he's going to have to make a decision. And I think Trump's going to deliver on what he promised.
I hope so. Because you can't blame Zelensky anymore. Basically, no. There's your metals deal and you want a peace agreement. I'll go to Turkey. And Putin called it and he doesn't show up. Now on Israel, the story yesterday is Israel's getting impatient. They just want to go and finish the job in Iran. Do you think they should wait?
Yeah, they have to wait a little bit. Look, Donald Trump is trying to give these regimes every possible chance to do these things peacefully and to do an agreement. The same thing with Russia, same thing with Iran. The Iranian regime has never been weaker. They've lost all their terrorist proxies. The Houthis have been pummeled. The Hamas has been all three Sinwar brothers are dead. The Hezbollah leadership has been destroyed. Their ally in Syria, their leader is meeting with Trump in Saudi Arabia and has turned away from terror. So they've lost their terror pipeline through Syria into Lebanon and Gaza and the West Bank. They've lost their air defenses. They've lost their ballistic missile capability. Mm-hmm. They're strategically naked. And so this is a moment for Trump to press the advantage and give them a stark choice. You either completely disarm or we take it out for you. And I give him some leeway to take some time to let the Iranians give a final answer. But I believe that he'll, again, the Israelis are going to, if the answer is no, Israel's not going to sit back and do nothing.
Lastly, Jake Tapper writes a book looking to cash in on his irresponsible way he handled and attack people that brought up how inept Joe Biden's administration was, and now he's trying to make money off it. And sadly, I think he will. On an Enemy Network morning show, he says this, cut 12.
It's absolutely a great question for the sources in the book, and many of them expressed regret that they hadn't come forward until Election Day. The bottom line is, the reason that Biden, his wife, his son, Donald and Ricchetti, and others convinced themselves that what they were doing was in the best interest of the country was,
right,
one, they thought only Joe Biden could defeat Donald Trump. They were convinced of that. Two, they thought that Donald Trump posed an existential threat to the republic.
Right.
And if you think that those are the stakes, you can justify almost anything.
Oh, you're nuts. Number one, he can't beat Donald Trump. No polls were showing that. And this guy, though, he was a total freak that he won because he didn't have to campaign. That is the most ridiculous rationalization.
Well, that's his excuse for doing what he did. I mean, keep in mind, Jake Tapper is, you know, he said, well, if people had come forward with these stories, I would have reported them. That's not how investigative journalism works. You dig, you know, and you know who did dig was Annie Linsky and Siobhan Hughes at the Wall Street Journal. And Tapper, when he reported on their story, he pissed all over them. He said that, well, you know, of course, this is the Wall Street Journal is owned by Rupert Murdoch and News Corp, the same people who run Fox News, you know, questioning their credibility. He called for 5 years. He dismissed the idea that Biden's cognitive decline was a real thing. He called it Russian disinformation. He said that people were making fun of his stutter. He said that it's not, yes, he's nothing like they portray him on Fox News. And now everybody knows that was a lie. He was the worst offender in the cover up. And for him to turn around now and suddenly become the intrepid reporter who's digging up all these great stories, he was part of the cover up.
He's
trying to make a buck off of it. It's the most brazen. I would have respected this book if it was a mea culpa. If he had said, you know what, I should have dug deeper. I was wrong. I allowed myself to be misled, and I did. I made a mistake. I'm sorry, America. Then maybe I would forgive the book. But the idea that he's like now like blameless in this whole thing is just absolute preposterous. And this is why nobody trusts the damn media.
No.
Nobody
CNN.
Believes these people because CNN, they MSNBC. Lie to us over and over again, from the Russia collusion conspiracy theory to the Hunter Biden laptop to this.
Gotcha.
Lie after lie after lie.
Mark, I took you into overtime again, but you're 100% right. But please don't include Fox in that, because we said the same story with the laptop, with the Russia hoax, and with this. I think people appreciate it. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Starting a business can seem like a daunting task, unless you have a partner like Shopify. They have the tools you need to start and grow your business. From designing a website to marketing to selling and beyond, Shopify can help with everything you need. There's a reason millions of companies like Mattel, Heinz, and Allbirds continue to trust and use them. With Shopify on your side, turn your big business idea into... Sign up for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/special offer.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Yeah, I went a little low on Mark Thies, and we have so much to talk about. When we get back, I'm going to talk Ukraine. But just quick note, I'm going to go on stage June 21st, a month away now. WHIO listeners, listen up. And if you're in the Dayton area, History, Liberty, and Laughs, we have a great time, especially with all this breaking news. And we also look back in our history as we come up on year 250. Just left the USS York, and the Navy's 250 this year, as is the Army. Remember, we're fighting. Declaration of Independence starts in 76. That's next year. So go get tickets. And then, of course, I'm going to be in Dallas, Texas. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. And that is the 23rd and the 27th of September in Richmond, Virginia. And there's also VIP opportunities to get there early, have a chance to talk to everyone, answer your questions in a more relaxed setting before everything gets crazy with the big crowds. So BrianKilmeade.com. And don't forget One Nation this Sunday, too. When we get back, we go out to Ukraine to find out the reality on the ground. What are they expecting Vladimir Putin to do with Donald Trump?
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
President Zelensky of Ukraine says that the Ukrainians are ready for a ceasefire. They're ready for peace negotiations. In your mind, is Ukraine doing enough to get this?
I'd rather tell you in about 2 weeks from now, because I can't say yes or no. I think, look, he's a strong person. Zelensky, a strong guy, and he's not the easiest person to deal with. But I think that he wants to stop. He's, you know, not. It's a very bad thing that's happening over there. I think he wants to stop. But I could answer that question better in 2 weeks or 4 weeks from now. I hope the answer is that he wants to get it solved.
Meanwhile, Vladimir Putin, behind the scenes, President Trump has told people Putin does not want to stop the war. Daniel Bilak is in the middle of it. Member of the Territorial Defense Forces of Ukraine joins us now. Used to work with the previous prime minister. Daniel, how are things on the ground right now? And what are your thoughts about what the president said about the two sides?
Yeah, Brian, great to be back. Well, I'll tell you, I spend a lot of sleepless nights as the Shaheds fly over my house and our anti-missile systems take them out. It's for hours on end. So, you know, every time Putin tries to pretend that he's going to be involved in a ceasefire with President Trump, we get bombed twice as bad. And, you know, we had great hopes that President Trump was going to end this war. I mean, the Ukrainian people really believed when he said in the election campaign that he was going to do that. And it's just
it is just painful to watch how Putin is deliberately disrespecting the president and making him and America really look weak. I mean, it's a country that has an economy that's not even the size of Texas, for God's sake, and is in a lot of trouble. But, you know, he doesn't respect the president like the president thinks he does. And the problem is that when you make comments like, if you don't agree to my ceasefire, I'm going to put on sanctions, and then you don't, makes you look weak. We saw that with Obama in Syria, and it undermines American credibility around the world. And, you know, we can't afford that. America can't afford that.
Well, a couple of things. I think in a couple of weeks he does not come around, he's supposed to bring up a proposal. I have no faith in Vladimir Putin to come up with anything. I think we're going to end up with sanctions on the central bank and sanctions on third party who buy anything from them. The other question is, with the money that's frozen, why are we not at least spending the interest on that money?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a great question. And that money is now in the accounts of a lot of central banks among our allies, because those assets have become liquid. But, you know, to your first point, Brian, I mean, Putin is a liar and a terrorist. I mean, he's satanic. He's just evil. He's kidnapped 20,000 children, as you pointed out on your show many times, you know, taking them from their families in Ukraine and put them up for adoption in Russia, for heaven's sake. You know, he's been persecuting Christian evangelicals in the occupied territories. I mean, you know, I read that there's 81 senators that have signed on to a sanctions bill, and I really hope that goes through, and it gives the president a way out too. You know, he can sign that bill, and you know, it puts more pressure on Russia, because, you know, people are dying here every single day from him bombing our cities and pulverizing our cities. And, you know, it's just tragic. And, you know, the comment that the president made is right. Of course we want an end to this war, but not just any end. I mean, if we don't stop Putin and have America and our allies, you know, stand behind us to do that, then, you know, he's going to slaughter us all. This war is, if Putin decides to end this war, he just goes home and the war is over. If we stop fighting, he rolls us and kills us all. I mean, this is existential for us, Brian, as you know.
What are you doing weapons-wise? I hear more and more it's about drones.
Well, the nature of this war and the nature of combat and warfare have changed dramatically. You know, basically, you know, we're holding the lines and killing, you know, 30,000 to 40,000 Russians soldiers a month. Through technology, through the development of our drones. But, you know, we also need to buy more regular kit and more HIMARS and all the stuff that's been so great that the United States has been giving us. And we're prepared to buy it. We don't want aid. The Europeans are prepared to help finance $50 billion of weapon sales from the United States. And, you know, this is money and jobs for Americans.
What's the answer?
The bottom line is,
do they say yes or no?
Well, President Trump wavered. He didn't say yes. He didn't say no, which I don't really understand. I mean, you know, the only way that Putin comes to the table, Brian, really, is all of this theater, diplomatic theater that's been going on around the ceasefire. But the only way he comes to the table is if his power is threatened. He thinks he's winning, so he's got no incentive to have a ceasefire, right? And the Russian army in Ukraine is actually quite weak. And we can win this war with the support of our allies, and that's how you get Putin to the table, is when the Russian army is on the back foot, and also with sanctions, when the Russian economy starts to get really feeling a lot of pressure. And that's why we're developing deep strike capabilities with our own weapons, because we don't get enough deep strike missiles from our allies. So we've developed our own deep strike drones. We've taken out 20% of Russia's petroleum production ability. You know, Germany lost World War One not on the battlefield. It lost World War One when it literally ran out of gas because its productive capacity had been destroyed. And that's the only message that Putin understands, is force and resolve. And, you know, we'll buy the kit. Just sell it to us and stand by us.
So the fact that they basically in Russia converted their economy to a, to all they do is make weapons. That's what people say, that he can't stop the war, because what is he going to do with all these people when you don't need as many weapons? I mean, he could stockpile, he could expand, but sooner or later, he is going to realize there's no money in that.
You're 100% right. I mean, Putin is preparing his people for permanent war against the West. Putin, you know, America first seems to me to mean knowing who your friends are, right? And Ukraine is a stalwart ally of the United States. We've always been there for the U.S. We sent soldiers into Iraq to fight shoulder to shoulder with American soldiers. Our special forces guys went into the marketplace to pull out Americans in that disastrous evacuation in Afghanistan. We just signed a minerals deal with the United States that gives the American people a stake in the development of our economy, and it's going to be a win-win situation. But, you know, Putin is an enemy, and, you know, he, China, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, as I call them, with Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran, they want a weak and coward America. They want to be able to tell you who you can sell your products to, how much, where, and when. And, you know, something's got to stop. You know, in America, in 2014, when the war started, when the war really started, when Putin invaded Crimea and the Donbas, Obama sent us blankets. In 2016, President Trump sent us javelins. And I remember, Brian, at the beginning of the war, at the beginning of the full-scale invasion, which I was involved in defending Kyiv, that I saw those javelins in action. And if we hadn't had them, we might not be here today. So, you know, we just need to end this war, but we need to end it on terms that mean Russia can't do this again, and to protect the security of Europe, because that's got to be in America's interest. Putin is your enemy, and he is going to always be your enemy. He needs an enemy. Otherwise, he's got no reason to be in power.
He does. You know, we promise him economic ties if they stop this. And, you know, Trump's coming in saying, listen, I know, you know, you got a bad track record. You got a lot of enemies. I'll put it all behind you. Let's just stop this. He knows the one thing. If he totally alienates Trump, it's over. So he's got to figure out both ways. If he what he submits is just ridiculous. Don't have a military, have immediate elections, give up all the Donbass. That means he's not serious. So I'm waiting to see, because he doesn't just want to say Donald Trump doesn't know what he's talking about. I don't want. He's not doing that.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the only thing he understands is force and resolve. And, you know, appeasing him, all he does is double down. You know, ever since this, you know, the ceasefire was talked about, but not acted upon when, you know, it's been 2.5 months. Since, I mean, the Ukrainians signed up right away. It's been 2.5 months since President Trump put this out there. And, you know, essentially, Putin's been flipping him the bird, you know, and dragging it out, et cetera. And all it does is means that we get more bombs and drones, Iranian drones, rain down on our heads. You know, Winston Churchill said that appeasement is like feeding a crocodile, hoping you're going to get eaten last. And I really hope that the Senate passed a resolution on the children, the 20,000 kids to return them. But there's a big sanctions bill that's prepared, and I'm really hoping that that'll get through and that the president will sign it. And that'll be a real – you got to weaken the Russians. You got to weaken the economy. And, you know, 50% of the shells that they're using on the battlefield are from North Korea now. They can't produce enough tanks. They can't produce enough kit to continue fighting. So, you know, this is, they're a paper tiger, Brian.
I hear you. And they don't want to fight. They can put prisoners up. They're out of prisoners. Daniel Bilak.
That's right.
Thanks so much. Hang in there. I know something's going to happen soon. One way or another, they're going to. Whatever happens, just don't listen to J.D. Vance when he says we're going to walk away. That would not be good. Daniel Bilak, thank you.
Thank you to the people of the United States. God bless.
You got it. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You know, though.
So but, I said that this was Biden at his best.
Sure. Mm.
That's what I saw.
I don't
That's
doubt.
What other people saw. I was obviously wrong. So I'm not sure what my takeaway is here the next time. But if you're around a guy for hours and hours and hours, I guess the question is, what's the takeaway here?
So Jake Tapper says his reporting found out that they targeted Scarborough, that Biden told the staff, I'm going to go make Scarborough, evidently he had some negative things to say about him, I'm going to show him that the Wall Street Journal story was wrong, and I'll prove to Scarborough that I'm okay. Joe Scarborough also told this story that he was in Ireland and he was calling home complaining that he can't keep up with Joe Biden. That is not true. It is not true. Do you remember the video of Joe Biden and Hunter having to interpret for him as he worked the line and told him how to what they were actually saying and what to do? I mean, you look like an invalid. And in Ireland, he looked terrible. Treated like a rock star. He wasn't treated like a rock star. I saw that video. He's not treated like a rock star. Now, listen to...
We have Jake Tapper saying how the Bidens targeted Scarborough to help persuade
him. So then Scarborough's sitting there trying to, in real time, by the way, Mika thinks that he is still the best president ever. So that's how ridiculous that show is. So then Jake Tapper says this.
In your specific case, Joe, our reporting indicates that Joe Biden, who, as you know, is a frequent viewer of the show, saw when David Ignatius wrote that column in, I think, August 2023, saying that Joe Biden should not run for re-election because of what he had been hearing.
Right.
And he came on this show, and you guys had a robust conversation about this. You largely agreed that you'd been hearing things about this, but that there was really no alternative, that Kamala Harris was not up to the job. That's what Democrats were telling you behind the scenes. Joe Biden saw that. Joe Biden said to staffers that he wanted to convince you that you were wrong. And he focused on you like you were a constituency, like you were farmers in Iowa, like you were the Kiwanis Club in New Hampshire, and he made sure that you thought
differently.
Made sure that you thought differently. I think he did this with a couple people. I think he did it with Meacham. He might have done it with Evan Osnos. He knew that there were people that had to be convinced that he was fine, and he tried to prove that to you.
John Meacham, who wrote the inauguration speech and then praised it, who I like, he doesn't talk to us anymore, but this is ridiculous. The bottom line is, if you are of sound mind and you committed a crime, trying to convince somebody that you didn't do the crime is okay. It's par for the course. I believe him. All right. I was wrong to believe him. But when you have somebody that can't hold a thought in any time, I mean, you see him with Stephanopoulos. He does these sit downs. He gives it after the Robert Hur report comes out. He comes screaming out, makes up two stories that the transcripts and the tapes show are lies about, asked about Bo's death. And he said, how dare you ask me about Bo's death? What happened is he doesn't even understand the year Bo died. He doesn't understand when his term ended. And you hear him meandering. There's no way that any rational person would think that Joe Biden is fine. And his inner circle was laughing at the press. Cut 10.
When you were reporting this, did people in his inner circle, did those that you talked to acknowledge that the media, were they surprised by how complicit the media was?
It was interesting. I had one conversation with someone. This was after the election, while we were reporting this book. This person said, listen, yes, we deserve blame for X, Y, Z. We were hiding him. This person also sort of got in my face and they said, listen, the media deserves some blame too. Like, we were sort of amazed at some of the stuff we were able to spin. You guys should not have believed us so easily.
You believe this? So think about it. The people that you covered for that should be saying, well, the media, they're laughing at you. Inside the Biden administration, they're laughing at you. It's very similar to what the Obama administration was saying, that it's an echo chamber. Remember, you had their foreign policy advisor come out and say, it's amazing what I say. Behind the scenes, I echo here, and it comes back to me in columns that the press write. There's no discernment. And one thing that Peter Ducey brought up, he said, you notice after I asked those questions,